This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Help me welcome back to the program Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. Their new book is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. Good afternoon. How y'all doing?
We're doing fine, Coy. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Same to you.
Great to be back.
We wanted to touch base because Jeremy Scahill in The Nation broke some news this week, just a couple of days ago, that is just huge news. And as far as I'm concerned, not being talked about enough. And I want to get two of the best experts that we have in this nation on Afghanistan and Pakistan to weigh in on this. And tell us first, and I'll let you present his story. It's titled Blackwater's Secret War in Pakistan. What is the story, and what's the significance of this?
Well, the significance of this is that this has been going on under General McChrystal's command for many years. This is what was being done in Iraq, and it was also implemented in Afghanistan. And it is the secret assassination program, as well as essentially kidnapping, snatch and grab, I believe is what they refer to it as, where secret teams go in. They go into Pakistan, they go into Afghanistan, in villages in the middle of the night. They grab suspected terrorists, and they're never seen or heard from again. This has been going on in Pakistan, and it's created an outroar in Pakistan on behalf of the Pakistani people. When Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, was there last month, she was essentially accosted by Pakistanis of all stripes, civilians who came to her and said, what the heck are you doing here? You're targeting our people. You're raiding people. You're raiding villages in the middle of the night, and they asked her about the legality of the of these targeted drone assassinations, whereby people are basically picked out of out of a list, and apparently a list provided by Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, which is the big issue here, and delivered to the Americans, and the Americans go and assassinate these individuals.
And there's a very important component that is not even addressed in the article, and it certainly is not a part of the general discussion, and that really has to do with the issues having to do with the Pashtuns, the Baluchs, and the Sindhis, who have actually, since the creation of the state of Pakistan, have actually been struggling to try and get their own independence recognized. And so these are core issues that really play very, very dangerously into this idea of actually targeting individuals, according to Pakistani intelligence, who really end up oftentimes being independence-minded nationalists who are trying to create a state for the Baluchs, a state for the Sindhis. And, of course, the Pashtuns also have an issue with the Pakistanis, with the Punjabi-run Pakistanis. In fact, there's a very interesting observation made by Amnesty International in a report called Denying the Undeniable Enforced Disappearances in Pakistan, which cites chapter and verse on the massive violations of human rights of Baluchs and Sindhi activists who have disappeared without a trace. Now, in this report, it is compared to the Pinochet's Chile as being much worse than that. So we're really talking about a very, very dangerous use of American power.
Yeah,
this way.
This is just amazing. We're talking with Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. Their new book is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. And we're talking about Blackwater's secret war in Pakistan. It really is amazing. So the folks who end up on this list provided by Pakistani intelligence could be, I just want to extend your thoughts just a little bit here. They could just be political enemies. I mean, there's no telling they're actual terrorists that are a threat to the United States. They could be political enemies of the person writing the list.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why there's so much outrage in Pakistan over these particular killings.
See, these issues go back to the origin of the creation of Pakistan, and the Punjabis running Pakistan has been a problem in being in control of the Baluchs, the Sindhis, and the Pashtuns who live under Pakistani rule. This has been a problem. These are the issues that are now being claimed to be terrorists when, in fact, these are nationalist movements within Pakistan.
Yeah, yeah. And the intelligence is saying, hey, these people are terrorists, they're a threat to the United States, mm-hmm. when, in fact, that's not really the case. This is a burgeoning civil war. Folks who live in Pakistan and don't recognize Pakistani authority.
Exactly. And when we were in Afghanistan in 2002, right after the war ended, the first phase of the war ended, let's put it that way, we were told by local Afghans. They said, you know, what are you doing? You're making, you know, you're going around and making enemies with everybody. You're listening to this warlord and that warlord and this intelligence source and that intelligence source, and you're going and you're taking out people that should be your friends. You're creating a disaster here. It's just, it's something waiting to happen. And of course, this has also been going on in Afghanistan as well. The issue of the nationalities issue, the ethnicities issues. The United States has been conducting a war against the Taliban, but the Taliban are essentially 99.9% Pashtun. And they are the majority population of Afghanistan, and they are a sizable percentage of the population of Pakistan. And so we've kind of contributed to this ethnic cleansing of Pashtun tribal areas, which started, of course, in the 1830s with the British and is still going on today. It was a tradition that was never looked at. We never went in there in 1947 after the creation of the state of Pakistan and said, is this the right way to go about managing this operation, this defense operation? Because it all came in under the auspices of the Cold War, and when the Cold War ended, everything just proceeded along as normal without ever going back to the original program that had been written.
There's also another side to this, too. When you really begin to look back at the pattern of choices made, you know, let's say starting with the Bush administration, where the original focus was, we got rid of the Taliban. There's a great opportunity here to bring stability to the region and help the Afghan people get back their nation. And instead, everything that was done simply made that impossible. I mean, one of the great unknown stories, once again, a little piece of invisible history, is something called the Airlift of Evil. This really ties into the same idea about the kinds of things going on, these completely privatized kind of approaches to effectively foreign policy. The Airlift of Evil was at the very end of the Taliban reign, right before the collapse. There were a number of sightings of Pakistani military assisting the removal of all kinds of suspected Taliban and other people who were considered to be the ones, the insurgents, who were fighting the American forces. And these people were airlifted out by Pakistani military, and apparently the Americans were well aware of it, that in fact it was believed that they got approval. Apparently, the nickname, actually, the Airlift of Evil, was actually given to this particular activity by the American military observing it and could not do anything about it.
Well, wait a minute. So during the invasion of Afghanistan by American forces, Pakistan was airlifting out the people we were fighting.
Yes, that's right. At the very end,
when they knew the Taliban was going to have to withdraw, the Pakistani military was allowed to go in and help certain people get out.
And we okayed that?
Yeah, apparently, yes. This is apparently why it was nicknamed the Airlift of Evil, because the American military who observed it were aware of who was being removed.
And they had their hands tied. They weren't allowed to
Absolutely.
Do anything.
That's right.
Exactly.
The U.S. military was not allowed
right.
to interfere.
That it got approval at the highest level.
So this has been going on for a long time. There are you know, deeper agendas at work here, and unfortunately, our own military is often the victim of some of these political decisions.
We're talking with acclaimed journalists Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. Their book, a must-read if you want to understand what's happening in this region of the world, is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. What do you think is the motivation for that, for the Airlift of Evil, for Washington saying to the military, stand down and let Pakistan take our enemies away and hide them in the mountains?
Well, I think what you're really what we're observing are things that don't make sense based on what's stated. I think what we need to realize, it's clearly far more important to actually look at the facts on the ground and compare them to what's stated. But the facts on the ground are the reality, and that's what we have to work with. It is obvious that there is a very, very high-level relationship between America's intelligence community and the Pakistani intelligence community. That has been long-lived. The American intelligence was well aware and very supportive of the Pakistani intelligence creating the Taliban, which was always for the purpose of subjugating Afghanistan, of installing a Pakistani-friendly government, and that the whole insurgency that really was created by this kind of activity that eventually was blowing back on Pakistan. But the fact is that the Pakistanis still would prefer to see a Pakistan, a friendly government in Afghanistan, and that still is the Taliban, which is considered to be primarily controlled by Pakistani intelligence and supported by Pakistani intelligence. So once again, I think we have to look at the facts as they are expressing that reality. And when we hear things like, we want to bring democracy to these poor people, we need to really realize that, I think there's a lot of public relations that goes into the way these stories are framed for public consumption. The entire election that we just lived through with Karzai and Abdullah was completely for American public consumption. The Afghan people do not recognize the authority of Karzai. He was effectively handpicked by the United States from the very beginning. He was never the choice of the Afghan people. And so it is not because of the corruption that eventually has taken over his administration. This actually goes back to the original installation of Karzai.
Amazing. Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald, the book is Invisible History. Paul, help me understand the relationship between the U.S. and Pakistan, because it would seem to me, and again, and I totally agree with the point that Elizabeth was making, I think the first order of business for an American citizen is always, always to pay attention to what is done and not what is said. That's much more important, the actions rather than the words. And hopefully we've learned that by now as a people. But I'm still trying to wrap my mind around our relationship with Pakistan, because on the face of it, it would appear that these would be our enemies. Is this a kind of keep your friends close and your enemies closer kind of thing?
Well, that's part of it, I think. But we were told many, many years ago by someone who was inside the system. They said, whatever you think you see from the outside, internally it's consistent. It's internally consistent with what's going on. So when we see things, this is like physics. They have these quarks and things that appear out of nowhere, and they don't know where they come from, and they think they disappear into another dimension. Well, there's all kinds of agendas at work here, and we tend to think of this as an American, American forces are fighting in Afghanistan. Well, there's a lot of separate interests that go into this. Saudi Arabia is very heavily involved in this issue, as well as China is involved in this issue. The Iranians are involved. The Indian government is involved in this. There are long-standing issues that go back in this part of the world. I mean, it is a cliche to call it the great game, but the fact is that there is a game at work here. There's a very sophisticated relationship that's been going on between these cultures for thousands of years. And we go in there with our Predator drones and our high technology, and we're not really, we hope we'll get a solution by killing off a few select individuals, as opposed to dealing with the complexities of the region and the ethnicity issues in these various countries and their thousand-year-old feuds with each other.
You also have to realize that the creation of the state of Pakistan really was a completely controlled by the British as they were departing the region, that this really was their way of really leaving in place, a mindset that really was going to carry forward with effectively British 19th century colonial policy towards the region. And that's pretty much what the Punjabis have been doing in Pakistan. And so when the United States really has a relationship with the Pakistani intelligence, they're effectively taking the lead from the British, who really are the ones who, basically created this country to serve the needs of the departing British Empire.
Yeah, and the way that they drew the map as the British colonials left town across the globe couldn't have been stupider. I mean, they drew these maps and put these people together in these countries that they're just asking for decades and generations of trouble.
But that actually, you see, there is a chaos theory that some geostrategists feel is the best way to keep the world under control. So what you just said makes common sense if you want a stable world where everything is working. But if you actually believe that you will lose control if that happens, you basically want policies that leave instability in place.
So you create countries and you draw boundaries on the map and you force people together to guarantee civil wars, and then therefore they'll never really... They won't ever be in a position to challenge your hegemony.
Exactly, your hegemony in the region. I mean, look at Ireland as an example. I mean, Ireland was Britain's first colonial experiment, and it worked perfectly. They divided the country. They fought wars year after year after year for hundreds of years. The first invasion was in the 12th century, and by 1600, the Battle of the Boyne was when they finally established this group in Northern Ireland that they had transported. You know, the so-called Scots-Irish. Well, Scots-Irish were actually dispossessed farmers from Scotland who were brought over to Northern Ireland in order to colonize those areas on behalf of the Crown. And so this is still, to this very day, an issue of conflict. And these are between two groups of people who are ethnically identical. If you did genetic DNA testing on these two people, on the Scots-Irish and the Irish, the native Irish, you'd find absolutely no difference whatsoever. But here, politically, socially, they've been kept apart for 400 years.
Amazing.
So imagine what's going on in a complex situation where you have Persians and Chinese and a multitude of various kind of Afghan ethnicities involved.
And here come the American troops in behind the British, you know, decades later, dealing with all this stuff and just aggravating it.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, the Americans particularly. I mean, the fact is that, you know, Britain, the East India Company was founded in the year 1600 and chartered by Queen Elizabeth I for the purposes of doing what they did in the 16th and 17th and 18th centuries, going into that part of the world and competing with Rome as an example for an economic empire. And this is what has been going on. But they had a relationship with India. They had that empire in there for hundreds of years before they finally left it in 1947. The United States has no history. It's like it's the same as with Vietnam. The French had a relationship with the Vietnamese people, and they were fighting over very specific things there. The United States goes into these countries and really doesn't have the background. We have a technological basis. Our whole idea is to go in and resolve these issues through technology. And if the technology doesn't work, then we're really up a creek.
Yeah.
And that's where we are right
now. Let me ask you this, Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. I literally have about a minute left, but I did want to ask you about the significance that what we're talking about is Blackwater's secret war in Pakistan, a private army of mercenaries that are, in some roundabout way, on the payroll of the United States government. This is one aspect of the story that really troubles me.
The fact of the matter is privatizing covert operations is nothing new. That is the way that the CIA for generations has been able to get projects through that they didn't want any scrutiny of. But this clearly is a formalizing and an expansion of that process. So I think in a way it's good because it's now been made public. We now have a lot of people who are becoming aware of it that could never have imagined that the original financing of the Mujahideen in the early 1980s was effectively privatized.
And just remember, I mean, the whole reason, the whole motivation for what we represent as Americans to the world was the power of law and legal institutions. And what this does is this simply violates the very premise of our own existence. This is a big problem.
Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald. The book is Invisible History, Afghanistan's Untold Story. I'm already looking forward to talking to you again. Y'all have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
Corey. Take care.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.